Welcome to Inspired Living with Mark and Kim. Every Wednesday, Mark and Kim, along with their special guests, will explore thought-provoking topics and ideas that promote creativity, self-help, healing, happiness, and well-being to inspire you on your spiritual journey. Each week, Mark and Kim will discuss different paths to achieving a more spiritual, balanced, happy, and healthy lifestyle. Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual. Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. Mark and Kim are tested, certified, and professional spiritual mediums, metaphysical teachers, healers, and spiritual advisors with their own individual spiritual practices in Seattle, Washington, and Los Angeles, California. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Would you like to have knowledge of a future event or situation beforehand? If you answered yes, we have a great show for you today. Welcome to Inspired Living with Mark and Kim. As always, thank you for being with us today and every Wednesday. I'm excited about our show today, and I think it's going to be one that's of interest to a lot of people out there. But first, I'm Kim Falcon. If you'd like to connect with me, you can do so at lovefirst.info. If I can support you in any way through readings, healings, or hypnosis, please do not hesitate to reach out. I absolutely love the work that I do and the people that I work with. You can also connect with me on Meetup under Kim Falcon. You can, or Love First, I should say. You can join me every Fridays on Facebook Live at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, for conscious and spiritual conversations, Q&A, and mini readings. This Friday's topic is going to be around the topic of letting go of identities and stepping into the real you. This seems to be a something that's come up recently a lot in conversation with me that inspired the topic. So it should be a good one, and I look forward to seeing you on Fridays. On this Friday, you can also call us live at 202-570-7057. Call in with your questions. Our guest today says she loves questions, so call in. This is time to ask, and she's got a wealth of knowledge around premonitions and precognitions and all those good things. So you can speak with us live. If you want to send through your questions on Facebook, you can do that as well. I will be checking our Facebook page as well. I am hosting solo again today. Boy, my co-host Mark is having a grand old time out there at Arthur Finley College in the UK. And so we're just sending him all kinds of love. Very much looking forward to him coming back. We're going to be wrapping up our last show at the end of November. Time is happening pretty quickly here. We're actually going to be talking about time, actually. It's kind of funny. But, times go by pretty fast, and the end of the year is quickly approaching us. So we're looking forward to our final show at the end of November. Next week, I'm going to be doing a solo show again, and I'll be talking about how to navigate your way through monumental life events like diagnosis, and particularly the relief to cancer, because that was something that I had a close experience for me this year, and so I'd like to be able to support others who might be going through the same thing. Our inspired affirmation for the month of November is, energy without focus is chaos. Focus on all the good coming your way. If you'd like to connect with us on social media, you can do that under Facebook, under Inspired Living Radio, Twitter and Instagram under Inspired for Us, Google Plus, Inspired Living with Mark and Kim. You can interact with us here, and you can also find out about upcoming shows and send through your questions and comments. We love to hear from you, and we absolutely are in great gratitude for our community, our Inspired community. If you'd like to listen to all of our archives, you can do that on OM Times Radio, Podbean, SoundCloud, MarkLanehart.com, YouTube, iTunes, and LoveFirst.info. Real quickly, if you'd like to learn more about all the beautiful work Mark is doing up in the Northwest, in the Seattle area, you can do that at MarkLanehart.com. or you can Google the Intuitive Prospector. So today's topic is The Premonition Code. It's a book that is written by Julia Mossbridge, our guest today. She is a futurist trained in cognitive neuroscience. Wow. She's a fellow at the Institute of Noetic Sciences and a visiting scholar at Northwestern University in the Department of Psychology. Dr. Mossbridge is the co-author of Transcendent Mind, which is one of the first academic books to examine paranormal experiences. And her research focuses on precognition and the possibility of time travel. Oh my goodness, all just really great, interesting topics here. Thank you so much, Dr. Mossbridge, for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Kim. I think it'll be a fun show, and I love talking with people about all this stuff in ways that hopefully everyone can understand. So if people have questions, though, sometimes I can get into jargony world. So if people have questions, it would be great to hear from callers and to clarify those things.
Absolutely. And you've got a really interesting background. So talk to us a little bit about that, because it can get kind of tricky when we talk about academics and paranormal and the unseen world. So tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to the work it is that you're doing today.
Sure. My background is really in mainstream academic research, and I spent a lot of time at school, like most academics, and mostly focusing on cognitive neuroscience, some experimental psychology. So cognitive neuroscience is all about trying to understand what is the relationship between the mind or cognition and the brain, right? And especially I was interested in timing relationships, like what is the relationship between how the brain processes sounds and how the brain processes visual input, and how does that timing work when it's working, and what kind of disorders can happen when that timing isn't working correctly. So those are the kind of things that I sort of in broad strokes that I worked on in graduate school and in my postdoc. And I was in Northwestern for both of those times in my life. And then I started asking myself what I wanted to do in the future, and noticing that I was getting bored with what I was doing. And at the same time, I had this urge to ask bigger questions and to try to answer, to the extent that I could, some bigger questions about time. And I noticed that most of my research had involved temporal phenomena, whether it was oscillations, you know, things moving back and forth in time, events, periodicity, events changing in a regular way over time. And I started to think that there's something that's interesting to me about time. And then I remembered something that should have been obvious all along, but when you're in academia and you have mystical experiences at the same time, you are trained to sort of ignore the mystical experiences or separate them off or cordon them off like into another compartment. So you think of them as like, wow, I had this mystical experience. But of course, that has nothing to do with what I'm studying. But it turns out that ended up not appealing to me. I wanted to integrate what I was experiencing since I'd been a child, having precognitive dreams that would fairly accurately spell out events that would happen, not all the time, but periodically. And I thought, I want to integrate that with what I'm researching. I want to start looking into this precognition thing, because time is clearly important to me, and I have actual experiences where things seem sort of out of time. And I trust myself. I know that I'm not crazy. And so what's going on? So that's why I started studying the stuff. And then I got lucky multiple times by getting grants and, you know, funding to go look at this stuff. So I actually could spend time on it in an academic setting where it felt more legitimate because someone was paying me to do it. And then I decided that I wanted to try to get a tenure track position. And it turns out that when you have those kind of things like a paper about knowing the future ahead of time on your resume, it makes it a little hard. Of course, getting an academic tenure track position is hard for everyone no matter what. So it's very competitive. And I finally realized it's not really my thing. I want to do the research in the world, but I don't want to be at a mainstream institution where I have to basically hide that kind of work until after I get tenure. So I started finding other ways to do the work, and that's where I'm at now.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Yes, you went from a very linear world to incorporating a little bit of the nonlinear in that. And that, you know, that's something I think a lot of folks out here struggle with. In fact, I had a client that I was working with just yesterday where she's having fears about being vocal about who it is she is on the spiritual, metaphysical side. Coming out, right? She said, I feel like I'm still in the closet. And I think that's a lot of times what a lot of us struggle with, for fear of how we will be received or won't be received, the judgment that kind of comes along with that. And particularly in the world of academics, as you noted earlier, I can imagine that would be quite challenging. But here you are. Here you are. You're getting grants to write on these topics too, which is, that's pretty, I guess, you're really being supported out there by your universe to do that.
Yeah, thanks. So the grants are really to do research on the topics. Very few people pay you to write. So you take a risk when you write about something. With the Premonition Code, I wrote that with Teresa Chung, who's a UK author, and we were taking a risk to see if that would really work, but it has had some really positive impact. The whole point of that book is to take this work that's kind of hidden in academia. There are actual people who are literally in the closet. I'm sort of rare for sort of being out in the world and saying, hey, I'm doing this. I think it's normal. I think it's good. I think that helps a lot with allowing the universe to flow with what you're doing, to just be completely open about what's going on. Something, it's like if you're going to plant a flag and say, I would like this to work out, it would be nice if the whole rest of the universe could see the flag.
Can you repeat that? You're a little fuzzy. I'm sorry. You're a little blurry. Could you repeat that again?
Sure. I'm sorry. I was just thinking of the other academics I know who are still in academia who are very interested in these topics, but they're sort of in the closet about it. And I was saying, for good reasons for themselves, but I was saying that in terms of understanding how the universe works, it feels to me that if you're going to plant a flag that says, here I am, and I'm interested in this thing, whatever it is, and I want it to work out, it would be nice if other people could see the flag. So that's why I recommend, if possible for people's lives, getting out of the closet about whatever is true for you, regardless of whether it has anything to do with precognition or otherwise, because it really works for making your life a better place to be in.
Well, sure, because whatever is true for you is, it would be in alignment with your soul. And anytime we're living like that, we're going to be supported. You just, it's not, you know, you're moving with the flow as opposed to resisting it. So, yeah, I would have to agree there. But what I really love about, you know, the work that you're doing, too, is that, and some of the other guests that we've had on our show, is that we can see where a lot of the old constructs are starting to be challenged in different lines of work. So, like, we had Dr. Evan Alexander on our show, who's a very prominent neurosurgeon, I think he is, and he had a near-death experience, and so now he's out there in the medical field, which is also, you know, an area that's not so receptive of this kind of stuff. And here you are, so there's people like you out there in these different professions that are starting to bring new constructs into these environments, which is wonderful. I think we're seeing it happen, and it's through the guests that are coming on our show like you. So thank you for the courage that it takes to do that, and now for being able to share all of your experiences with us here today. So talk to us a little bit about the Premonition Code and what readers could kind of learn from your book. What do they have to look forward to here?
Well, sure. But first, I want to say thanks for your kind words about the courage. It does take courage. And at first, it was much scarier than it is now, of course, many things. So anyway, thanks for saying that. In terms of In terms of the book, to me, it's super exciting. And I hope, and I, so far it's been exciting to our readers, I think. At least they tell me that, right? So who knows, right? I'm sorry, I'm a scientist through and through, so I'm like, I want to see the data. So one of the reasons, right? Speaking of, one of the reasons we wrote the book is to get a bunch of data and to really understand the phenomenon of conscious precognition more. So what we're talking about in the book is precognition in general. It's called the premonition code because the word premonition, more people have had experience with that than with the word precognition. Precognition is more of a scientific term that describes premonitions, but also other kinds of experiences that have to do with getting information about future events that is not available in our five senses and does not come from just being smart about, well, on Thursday, my Aunt Betty calls and it's Thursday, so she's probably going to call. So that's not precognition. And so we wanted to title it premonition so we could reach out to people who have had that experience or know about that experience. And the word code is about trying to decode what that actually means for us and normalize precognition because it's a human phenomenon. It's well established scientifically. It is a controversial scientific phenomenon because the folks who study it have a hard time convincing people who don't study it of the data that they're finding, but nonetheless, it's well established scientifically for those, you know, if you read the papers, there's something going on. And it's normal. And in fact, it's incredibly useful. So the tone of the book is about, let's skip over this part where people are arguing or thinking they're super special if they have precognition. I'm not interested in either. I'm not interested in people saying, oh, look how special I am because I have precognition. I'm not interested in scientists who haven't read the literature saying, oh, that can't possibly be true because we know that events in time only go in one direction. I'm happy to talk to scientists who engage and have engaged with scientists who have read the literature, and then we can have a reasonable discussion about it. Or I'm happy to talk to lay people who have stories, but then quickly I want to say, look, this is a normal human phenomenon. It's very common. Instead of thinking we're special or being titillated by these things, let's try to build a culture in which this is not taboo, it's not considered special, and instead it's considered a useful human skill. Like if you had a child who came up to you and said, hey, I just started playing piano, you know, I'm 10 years old, I started playing piano, and I played this, and I imagined this beautiful piece, and I'm going to play it for you, and then this amazing work of art comes out of their fingers, you would not be titillated by it. You would be excited and proud and want to give the child some education and development around how to continue in piano and in composition because that's considered a normal human skill, right?
Yes.
So that's what we're trying to do with the book.
I love it. I love it. Stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes as we continue our conversation on the premonition code and our guest today, Dr. Julia Mossfred.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. Are you seeking answers to life questions? Would you like to connect to a departed loved one? Are you suffering from pain, stress, or anxiety? Kimberly Thalkin is a tested, certified, and professional psychic, spiritual medium, energy healer, hypnotherapist, and the founder of Love First, where life transformations happen. Love First services support, guide, and empower individuals by connecting them to their highest potential to live a healthier, joyful, and meaningful life that's filled with purpose. All services can be done by phone, Skype, or in person in Encino, California. Please visit lovefirst.info. That's LOVEFIRST.info for more information.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Death Row Dogs Rescue is a 100% all-volunteer, no-kill rescue 501c3 nonprofit organization. We are run solely by volunteers who dedicate their time and resources for the past 30 years to rescuing homeless pets from the streets in Los Angeles and surrounding areas, and from city and county animal shelters who are on death row, often moments away from being euthanized. We provide housing, medical care, and training to these neglected, abused, and often severely injured animals. Donate now, save a life, and allow these beautiful dogs to experience a home life filled with love. All donations are greatly appreciated and are tax deductible. Please visit www.deathrowdogsrescue.com to see some of our amazing dogs who need homes. Do not breed or buy. Make adoption your first option.
And welcome back to Inspired Living with Mark and Kim. Although it's just Kim today, Mark is off having a grand old time out there in the UK. So, Mark, we're just sending you all kinds of love as you study mediumship out there. Today, it is me hosting solo with our very own guest, Julia Mossbridge, Dr. Mossbridge, as we talk about her book, The Premonition Code, and what premonitions are and how they can be used in all kinds of topics around that. So, Dr. Mossbridge, before we went to break, we're just getting started on what inspired you to write this book and what people could look forward to when they read your book. And so I'll let you continue on because you had to stop in the middle there so we could go to break.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, there's a lot I could say, so breaks are probably good because it helps you reformulate my thoughts too, right?
Right.
But, our passion in getting the book out there is partially to normalize precognition and partially to create a worldwide platform for precognitives to train and to learn for free at the website that goes along with the book, which is thepremonitioncode.com. And so there's an extensive website with, if you click on positive precog training, when you go to thepremonitioncode.com, people will find an extensive array of classroom materials, different points of view about precognition, about intuition, and also a platform that actually uses a random number generator to pick a future picture that is your target and helps you go through the steps of trying to predict what's in the picture. And so that's, as far as we know, unprecedented worldwide, and we're hoping to get some, I mean, specifically me, because I'm the scientist of the pair of the two of us authors, Teresa Chung and myself. I'm hoping to get some really interesting data from this, but also the idea is to create a positive precog movement. So it's a movement of people who want to use precognition and hone their skills to make positive impacts for humanity. So I do think that once it becomes clear to sort of the general population and especially investment firms and corporations that precognition is a real skill and people can learn at it and people can succeed at it, the number of people who are already consulting for those kinds of organizations will go up, and there will be a positive precog economy. I'm hoping it's a positive precog economy, because in the book we also talk about things like the ethical principles and the time worldview and psychological factors that are really important to consider if you want to pursue this line of work and actually hone your skills well enough so that someone will pay you to do it.
Wow. Okay, so that's like really bringing this kind of work into the mainstream, so that it's taking the woo-woo out of it and really bringing it mainstream. When you're talking about it's corporations and having paid employees that are using precognition, but tell us, what are the benefits of this? How can we help ourselves through precognition, and also and how can we help humanity with this? Because I have some people, there's some people out there that they're afraid to know the future, and I've experienced this. Interestingly enough, since I've been here in Virginia, I've noticed that people that meet me that know that I do readings for a living, I'll have them say to me, don't tell me, no, I don't want to know. Don't, and I'm, mm-hmm. It's like 2 minutes into meeting them. It's like, yep. Whoa, wait a sec.
I've heard that too. Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay, but I just know that it's been a common occurrence for me out here in Virginia, not so much when I was in L.A., but, I mean, people don't even know me. They find out what I do, and 2 seconds into meeting me, it's like, no, don't say it. I don't want to know. Don't tell me. And I'm thinking to myself, tell you what? I don't even know your name yet. So, there's some fear out there, but there's a lot of good that you're saying that can be used for, looking into the future. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I'm happy. That's one of my favorite topics to talk about, is the personal changes that come with training yourself in this way, as well as the global changes that could come with people being put to good, this skill being put to good use for positive change. So in terms of the personal changes, it reflects really nicely. It's a good segue from what you were talking about, is this fear component. I've had that experience too. People say, you study precognition. No, don't tell me when I'm going to die.
Right.
All right. Great, I won't. And, it just doesn't work like that. And it does, I guess, for some people. But when you train yourself in precognition and you follow what I call the REACH principles, which are really simple, it just spells out REACH, respect for the unknown, ethics in your use of precognition, accuracy in your precognition, compassion for ourselves and others, and honesty in all our dealings. If you follow those principles and you're pursuing precognition and you're trying to help people in the world, what's going to happen, I think, based on the people I've interviewed and also on myself, is there'll be a shift towards an understanding of feeling at peace with the things that happen. It's almost paradoxical. You think that you want to get into teaching yourself how to be better at precognition because you think you want to know about this or that in your future. And what happens is the more skilled you get and the more you pursue it, as long as you're pursuing it for positive means, what seems to happen is you're less interested and you're more interested in helping other people get to a point where they're at peace with whatever happens. So it's interesting. It's like one of these things where people say, well, don't you want to go win the lottery? First of all, yeah, that would be nice maybe, but also it's really hard. Like, that's a really high level of precognition that I have certainly not been able to master, and many, many people have tried. The kind of precognitive information that people can get is usually symbolic and metaphorical, but it still could be tested scientifically. You just have to take advantage of those symbols and metaphors. So, and do some statistics. So there are changes that go on when you learn to be precognitive in a more classic, when I say classical, I mean like non-quantum mechanical, sort of in your everyday life experience in a more conscious way. And they have to do with the way you conceive of your life in time. So we're so used to conceiving of this moment now in the map of our lives is the only moment that exists. And what's interesting is while pursuing precognition and really training yourself in a rigorous way where you can be wrong, you know, not just where no one knows the answer and so you can't be wrong, but in ways in which you could be wrong and then you work on being less wrong over time. You have this, or people have this experience, and I have had the experience of the present being, feeling very present in the now, but being aware that the past and the future are kind of alive. They're kind of present too, and they can be accessed just like in a painting. You can look at the left side of the painting or the right side of the painting. And that gives a calmness to one's experience because it's like, yeah, the present is here and the past, I can still access it, and the future I can access. So there's a much more richness and a feeling of being integrated across all the past and future selves, including the present self, that makes you feel strong. It makes you feel like you're a whole person who has all this to draw from, and not every single thing has to be true in the present moment. You don't have to have a wonderful romantic partner in the present moment because you can have the sense that at some point you did or at some point you will, and that's part of you too. You don't have to have all the money in the world at the present moment because you can sense that in the past and the future you'll have enough to get by or you did have enough to get by. So it puts a lot less pressure on right now and feels a lot more peaceful. So that's a personal change that I think is really powerful.
Mm-hmm. That is very powerful. Yeah, because a lot of people spend their time in worry over the future, and then they're stuck in the past. But I know there's folks out there that say, well, what are your thoughts on this as it relates to time, you know, that the past and future timelines are all converging into the present moment so that none of that exists. The past doesn't exist in the future. All those timelines are collapsing into the present moment across all existences. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, in a certain sense, it's obviously true, right? In a certain sense, all we can experience right now is the present, right? But in a certain sense, it's obviously false. We never experience the present. We are always calling the present something that happened about half a second ago. So I think that those kind of flip statements, I think they serve a purpose, which is to remind people to stay in the present. But just reminding people to stay in the present generally doesn't work. Like, people have tried this. You know, unless you're going to meditate a lot and you're going to really have a meditative practice that basically where you mostly everything is collapsed and you're in the present moment, it generally – people in the West are not great at this, staying in the present. We are too worried about taking care of our bodies and ourselves, which is understandable given the insecurity that runs rampant. But I think it might be an alternative approach to what I'm trying to offer here is an alternative approach to meditation, which explicitly says, yes, the past and the future are real in a certain way. Just like when you're looking at a painting, if you're looking at the center of the painting, that's what's real for you at that moment. But you could also look at these other parts of the painting, and then they become what's real for you still in the present moment. And that's how it feels to me when I'm doing controlled precognition. I'm sitting down at a desk. I have an 8-digit number that has been randomly generated by the software on the website. And I am kind of looking at this painting of the future, and I'm staying in the present moment, but I'm allowing myself to receive information about that future painting. I'm allowing myself to receive from the future. So in that sense, it does have to exist because that feels like what's going on. And, you know, if we're going to go with phenomenology or what it feels like. So to me, that practice is much more centering on the present than just meditating because you get feedback from the world. If I get information from the future, I'm receiving information that what I'm about to see in this photograph is a tree, and I'm drawing out a tree and I have this feeling of fall colors and things like that. And then the image that's randomly selected from hundreds of photos is of a tree
I'm going to feel like I got information from the future, especially if I continue to be able to do that to, you know, at a rate above chance. And so to me, that gives you feedback, which is a lot speedier in training a mind. When you get feedback of trying to learn something, you're a lot speedier in training that mind to do something. Whereas with meditation, there's very little feedback, and so it can be very difficult. So that's the personal change part. And then in the global change part, so I'm envisioning, and I talk about this in the book, I'm envisioning what I call a positive precog council. And I worked on that with Teresa, my co-author. She and I did different parts of the book, but I'm talking about a positive precog council. And in this council, there would be a group of people who are, really good at dealing with human changes. So tapping into the future of humanity, another group that's really good at dealing with environmental changes, another group that's really good at dealing with potential terrorism and war concerns that are going to come up. And they could work with, you know, global bodies like the UN or individual governments to try to include precognition as one of the modalities of making predictions. You know, artificial intelligence is a great modality for making predictions, but to incorporate precognition, you'll get some of these things that weren't picked up because they can't be predicted from the past. So much of the prediction we do is based on prediction from the past, but something like the Las Vegas shooting couldn't be predicted from the past. So precognition would have been a great way to tap into that and to try to avoid those kind of things. And as the world heats up, and both you know, temperature-wise and politically, it would be really useful to have this kind of global resource available.
Goodness gracious, there we go. That's our second break. And just as I thought, this time is flying by. As we're talking, there's so much to talk about around this. So stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes as we continue our conversation on precognition and the premonition code with Dr. Mossbridge.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Have you wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
One planet, 7.3 billion people, only one you. Life offers us many opportunities and learning experiences. Are you ready to explore and discover this beautiful planet, the life and energy all around us, the spiritual world, and what is unseen, along with your own personal soul adventure? Mark Lanehart, the intuitive prospector, is the spiritual connection you have been prospecting for. Internationally known as a tested and professional clairvoyant medium and spiritual advisor, Mark's work as a metaphysical teacher, medical instructor, radio show host, inspirational writer, and hiking guide are here to help you on a journey of self-discovery, healing, inspiration, education, and a whole lot of spiritual awesomeness. Dare to dream, dare to explore, dare to live. For more information on Mark's spiritual practice in Seattle, Washington, please visit marklanehart.com or internet search The Intuitive Prospector.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more. All to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com. M-E-T-T-A mindfulnessmusic.com.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inspired Living with Mark and Kim and our special guest today, Dr. Julia Mossbridge, as we talk about precognition and the premonition code. We've covered all kinds of really interesting things on how precognition can be used in a very productive, practical way in our own lives and also to serve the rest of humanity as well. We talked a little bit about time, too, and the past, the present, and the future. So one of the things, Dr. Mossbridge, that you talk about is how we can send information to our past to alter our lives today. So talk to us about this. I bet a lot of people are going to be interested on how can we do this and how can it benefit us in our current life.
Yeah, so once you start really believing because you experience it, because you're practicing controlled precognition and you really experience it, or perhaps you have other reasons why you experience it. Once you really get it that you can access the past and the future, and that yourself is not just in the present moment but is extended through time, there's a lot of play and fun stuff and healing stuff, important sort of serious healing stuff you can do. And none of it is, as far as I know, scientifically validated. So this is something I would like to do. I have a series of experiments I would like to set up around this, but I don't need to talk about the experiments right now. I'm happy just to talk about some speculations I have. And here are the speculations. And this is a practice that I've been doing and I've been talking with people about. I think I might end up writing a book about this kind of practice actually itself. But the practice is essentially like imagining the space-time continuum as a piece of fabric and imagining that a pen or your finger could be poking up from underneath, and that is a point in the fabric of importance to you in your lifetime. Let's say it's something that happened in the past that was not great or you had a difficult time, and that's like a point of meaning in your life, and it has some emotions around it that are important to you. And the current moment is another point in time, so you can kind of put your finger or a pen up underneath the fabric, and that's the current moment. And if you stay with the current moment that's in the present, you can sort of slide the current moment in the fabric of the past moment that is the other pen or the other flag. I like to think of them as flags. Slide that other flag of the past moment to the present moment so they're side by side. They're co-located. Now you have your sort of fingers or pens or flags co-located under that fabric, if you can imagine that. So two peaked areas of the fabric are now right there, right next to each other. And now you get to take your current self, who has the wisdom of having lived through that. See, our future selves are always smarter than our current selves.
I'm sorry, Dr. Mossbridge, you're a little fuzzy again. Can you repeat that last part?
I'm sorry.
There.
I apologize.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll hold my microphone on my headset closer to my face. I think that's the problem. So anyway,
you sound great.
Oh, good. Okay, that's what I need to do. So it's like you take those two fingers or flags in the fabric of space-time, you orient yourself in the present moment, and you slide the finger that's underneath the previous moment so that it's taking the fabric and folding it. So those two moments are now co-located. They're now together. And what you do is, while staying in the present moment, you have this wisdom that you didn't have in the past. And that's the great thing about your future self. It's always smarter than your present self because it's already been through what you're going through. So you have this wisdom now. You are the future self for this past self. And you can say to it in your mind's eye, you can have a conversation with this child self or this earlier self, and you can say, I love you.
You can say everything you're doing makes sense for how you know what you knew at the time, and you're okay, and it'll turn out okay because it did, because you're still here. And those are the kinds of healing experiences you can do, and they're not very different from what therapists do, who do past life regressions, or who do, you know, a skilled therapist who's working with trauma patients might take them back to the time and sit with themselves and hold the hand of the earlier self that had the trauma. There's a deal where not only can you not make a different thing happen, it's not like you make a trauma not occur. And I think that you kind of can't do that. I'm not sure, but I think you kind of can't change what happened. But I think you can change the experience of it. And I think you could, what I'd like to test is that you could change the experience of it in the past. In other words, it's not just your current experience of a past trauma that you're changing, but it's in fact the past experience is being influenced. That's the part that I think requires an experiment to try to show. The rest is, you know, psychology and fairly well established. So I think that can be done, and I would like to try to do that experimentally. But regardless, I know that it seems to help people, at least in my experience, to just go back and hold the hand of yourself and tell yourself that you're loved and that it's going to turn out okay. And it feels really nice.
Yes, just to share, to add to that, I do a little bit of that work in hypnosis, just in regression, and it's the, you know, the future self, the self today, going back and working with the inner child, an aspect of you from the past, so to speak, and comforting that inner child in the way that you described, and it's very healing, very, very healing. So yes, I love what you're suggesting there, because we need to, those pieces of us that kind of fragment off, you know, from these kinds of experiences, need to be loved and come back to center again into the whole being of who it is we are, I think. And you talk about a nice way of being able to do that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I do. I think that This acceptance of the integration of the whole of who we are in space-time is very powerful, and it helps you love yourself and helps you forgive yourself, helps you not regret things. Because people I know who have worked through their childhood trauma and kind of who doesn't have it are people who have said, I wouldn't give up my childhood trauma for anything because it led me to where I am now. And I think that's a real gift to be able to be in that state.
It's very, very powerful. So much of it is how it is we interpret our experiences and see it and understand it on the deepest of levels. When you talk about, you know, what was precognition and so forth, what does this mean as it relates to, like, free will? You know, people talk about, well, we have free will in this life. So how does that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, free will is a little, so first of all, I don't think it has any implications for free will. You can believe completely in free will and precognition. You don't have to believe that the future is out of your, you know, that you don't have any control over the future to think that the future can be accessed. In other words, you know, if I like watermelon and I make my watermelon for lunch, that could be my free will accessing of the desire to eat watermelon. And at the same time, the day before, I might be able to precognitively discover that I'm having watermelon for lunch, right? I mean, in other words, free will generally means that you're going to try to do what you want to do. And there's no reason why that information can't be act like the question becomes, what am I going to want to do? And so I don't think that it really has any bearing. And for those of us, and I count as one of these who don't believe in free will, you could also tell a story how the future is completely predestined, but you could also tell a story that it's not. It's completely not predestined, but it's just not me who has control. And that's where I think that's where I sit with all of it. My sense is Free will is often associated with the ego. I get to do what I want. I think that my sense and my experience is that it's not my ego that has control. It's not my ego that's the author of my life. And it's not even this thing that I call I. So this thing that I call I don't think has free will. But something is compelling me to do different things. And that's the thing that has free will, and I don't think it's me. I think it's God or the universe or consciousness or whatever you want to call it, but it's not this little me that we're so worried about having free will. I think that's kind of bogus. So, I mean, just to be really honest about where I'm at with that.
Yeah, definitely. So where would you say, if you talk about all this and free will and who has control and stuff, in your experience or how you see things, where does the soul fit into that?
Yeah, I don't know how to define the soul. Sometimes I talk about the soul. So good question. How do you define the soul?
How do I define the soul?
Yeah. When you say soul, what are you talking about?
Your essence. That highest aspect of you, that part of you that is infinite, not where there's no disconnect from all that is.
Okay, so your essence, that is connected with all that is. I would say that would be another name for what I'm calling consciousness, or the part that has that. Here's the thing. I don't know that we have these individual. I think our egos love to think that we have this individual, like I have a Julia essence and you have a Kim essence, and they're somehow separated from consciousness as a whole. I think it's more like soup. I think it's like I'm a potato and you're a carrot in the soup of consciousness. And there's nothing super
special
about it. That's
the first time I've heard it. It's like that. And you know what, Sue,
no,
I'm to talk about the cold day over here. Okay.
Oh, is it? Okay, perfect. So, no, I think it really is much more blended like that. Like, sure, there's a potato and a carrot, but it's all part of the same soup, and the potato's not that special, and the carrot's not that special. And so whether or not the potato or the carrot independently has free will, I would say probably the whole soup has free will. I'd say the whole deal, the whole shebang, the universe has free will about what it wants to do next, and that's expressed. So this is just my mystical sense. Obviously, it's not scientific in any way because I can't prove this, of course, or even test it. But the universe has a sense of what it wants to do next, and that's what it expresses through us, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love it. Everybody's got their, you know, their own interpretation, and this is our own path of self-discovery where we're formulating our own truths and And that's a part of the process of our journey. So thank you for sharing that with us. You know, when we talk about precognition, we're running down to the last few minutes here, but there's some ethical things that need to be thought of too, or we need to be mindful of it as well. So what are some of the ethical and moral questions that come up around this as people become more and more they train themselves in this area. I know,
right.
on my own path and working with clients and stuff, you're not thinking about some of those things until you're interacting with other people and you're, wow, okay, about this.
That's right. So that we spent a whole chapter of the book on ethics and how to navigate these things in Premonition Code. And so there's a lot there. But some of the basic ethics are in those reach principles. So this piece of honesty, you never tell anyone you're 100% accurate because you're not. No one is. You never tell anyone you're the only person who has access to information about the future because you're not. There's more than one person. You never work for anyone where you feel intuitively that they're going to use the information to make a negative change in the world. You just don't do that. You don't also refer them to another positive precog. They don't want to do that either, so you just don't refer them out. When you're doing missing persons cases, you only work with law enforcement or the family of the person who's missing. You never work for a friend of a friend because that gets too sticky. You follow the religious or spiritual ethics of the person you're working with and of yourself. And if you can't do that, you refer it to someone else who can. So it's these kind of basic sort of be a good person and have integrity around how you're using the skill. These kind of basic things that we just spell out in the book. And then we invite people to create their own that are in line with their own spiritual tradition or their religious tradition. Because that's really important. You need to have an environment that's very supportive of you as you're doing this kind of work, because it can be destabilizing to really acknowledge that you're getting information from the future. That can be destabilizing. So you need to build a community and a culture around yourself where this work is valued and honored, and you can be transparent with it.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so important. That's like one of the first things I know when I stepped into this line of work, just finding community where you can share and be supported and be who it is you are. You know, all of those things, so important. Thank you so much for being with us today. Dr. Mossbridge has been sharing with us your wisdom on premonition and precognition. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kim. It's been great.
All the best to you. You continue on with your research and all the beautiful work you're doing out there. And thank you to the inspired listeners for being with us this week. And don't forget to join me on Fridays at 12 Eastern on Facebook Live. Until then, have
Thanks
a beautiful
so much.
Rest of the week. Bye now.